Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk. Puget Sound Energy, which is the biggest emitter of CO2 in Washington State, has recently proposed via an Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP. I know, wonky acronyms, but that's the nature of the beast. To the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission, or UTC, that they continue the same level of methane sales and concomitant pollution for the next 26 years. Today I'm going to be talking with Don Marsh again. He's the leader of the Washington Clean Energy Coalition. He's going to sketch out for us PSE's bizarre plan and the implication of that plan for us as citizens ratepayers. So here we go. Don Marsh, Washington Clean Energy Coalition, welcome back to Climate Talk. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, Don is a close follower of Puget Sound Energy, PSE, and PSE, of course, has two main focuses. One's electric and one's gas, natural gas, as it's commonly called. Nothing natural about it, of course. It's basically methane, but that's a conversation for another day. Don and I talked previously about PSE's role in electric here in our region, and today we're going to be focusing on gas. So, Don, first of all, just review for us briefly what you do and who Washington Clean Energy Coalition is.
Sure. Well, Washington Clean Energy Coalition, get my mouth warmed up here, is a nonprofit organization comprised of environmental and civic organizations, most of which have been involved in PSE's integrated resource planning efforts for quite a few years. That's how we all met, and we felt like we could have a stronger voice working together on PSE's energy planning efforts. And so we got together, and we have been pretty successful. We are known at the by the regulator of PSE, the state Washington's Utilities and Transportation Commission. We have had a real impact. Most recently, about a year ago, we were heavily criticizing PSE for not including climate change in their modeling. And that really makes a big difference in what their projections are. And we have been complaining about this for years. And finally, the commission had heard enough, and they really forced the issue, and PSE said, okay, we will do some climate change modeling here on out. So now I think they started last summer, so they've been including that in their latest plans, and it really does make a big difference. Our summers are getting warmer, our winters are getting warmer, and so the peak usage is moving around a little bit because of climate change.
So a couple of things I want to highlight there, just in general about the your coalition. First of all, it's just the notion of being a coalition. I think this is so powerful and something that needs to happen far more amongst folks that are concerned about the environment and the climate. We tend to get kind of passionately siloed off and almost in competition between groups as to whose voice is going to be heard and whose isn't. And this is such a huge issue, climate change I'm referring to, that we have to be talking to each other, working together. Otherwise, we're fractured and we're weaker as a result. And the second thing is, you know, so often I talk to people who really aren't sure that they can make a difference. And just hearing you say that by getting together with other people, focusing your energy, and one of the things I heard in there was hitting away at it month after month, year after year, and that's the path to success. There's no magic wand here. One of my friends likes to say that we're in a sitcom culture, whereas people want a 30-minute solution to problems. So I congratulate you and the Washington Clean Energy Coalition for both forming the coalition and for showing that that approach can really have a significant difference, even when you have a corporation like PSE with their billions of dollars sort of arrayed against you. So let's transition then to talk a little bit just about PSE. I mentioned they do electric and gas both. What are the areas that they serve gas, which we're going to be talking about in particular today?
Yeah, about well, a little less than half of their business is gas, and so they are the provider for Seattle, for example, where you live, Tacoma. People get their gas from PSE. Their territory is pretty big around the Puget Sound region, but it's interesting that there's three kinds of territories that they have within their largest territory. There are customers that receive both their gas and electricity from PSE. There's some who just get their gas, some that just get their electricity. And so it turns out that of their gas customers, they've got about 800,000 gas customers. About half of those are served by a utility, an electric utility different from PSE. And this is what's scary to the company. If they really embrace electrification, then about half of their gas customers will move to an electric utility that is not PSE. So they just say sayonara to those customers and they never see them again. So it's a scary thing for the company. And as a result, they for business reasons, they are dragging their feet on converting to electricity, which would be a much cleaner solution for most people. For heating their home or drying their clothes or whatever you're using gas for these days.
Yeah, so that's an interesting perspective that I'd been missing because I'd been thinking, well, PSE sells both gas and electric, so why would they care? If somebody takes the gas away, stops using gas, then they're going to replace it with electricity. But as you point out, there's lots of areas where they sell only gas, and where I live, Tacoma, is one of those places.
That's right.
So, in terms of how big PSE is, how, just generally speaking, how do they stack up versus the size of other utilities in the state of Washington?
So they are the biggest. So there's two other investor-owned utilities operating in Washington. There's Avista, serving sort of the east side of the state, and then there's PacifiCorp, so a little bit more south, and PacifiCorp also works in other states, Oregon, and I think there might be one or two others as well. So PSE is the biggest utility in Washington. And then there's I've just talked about investor-owned utilities. There are also a lot of smaller utilities that are either that are public in one way or another, where they could be municipal or public utility districts. So, for example, Tacoma and Seattle both have their own electric utilities.
Hey, and I gotta say, just as an aside, being a Tacoman, I love TPU. I mean, I think they do a terrific job. They're environmentally aware. The electricity is pretty much all hydro, so it's green, and I can run my induction stove with a clear conscience.
I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, I not bragging here, but I feel like I probably have a negative footprint, carbon footprint, what with my solar power and all electric and the rest of the house being all hydroelectricity, so plus driving an electric car. So it can be done, especially if you've got clean energy like TPU does. So you've used the term investor owned. I think that's a term you used. So
Yes.
that means that this is basically a privately owned institution that's basically there to make a profit for the investors. Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, that's exactly, highest priority, which is true for pretty much any corporation, is the shareholders come first. And then then we'll talk about customer satisfaction or reliability or environmental footprint. Those are all they're all concerns of PSE, but if push comes to shove, the investors really are the top priority.
Yeah, so if I'm going to be a little cynical about this, I could even say, well, if PSE can wring a few more bucks out of the ratepayers and pass them on to the investors, that's what they're going to do, right?
Yeah, if they can get away with it. Now,
Yeah.
they do have to make the case to their regulators. So that's sort of the deal we've made. We've made PSE a monopoly. So, you can't, in most parts of PSE's service territory, you can't say, "Oh, I'd like to get my energy from some other provider." That's not a choice that we have. In some other places, like for example, Texas, you can choose among quite a few different providers, and they'll have different costs, but they also have different environmental footprints and things like that. So you can make consumer choice is it's interesting. Some people worry that maybe sometimes you can have a race to the bottom as far as just get the cheapest price and everything else be darned. But anyway, we don't have that choice. But the trade-off we've made then is we have the Utilities and Transportation Commission, which oversees PSE's rates. And so PSE will propose to the commission and say, we want to raise rates by 14%. And the commission will look at the case that they're making. And then quite often in the past few years, the commission has said, well, okay, maybe 8% would increase would be more reasonable. So PSE can't just arbitrarily charge us. It has to go through this that's rate making process.
Yep. Okay. Well, we could talk all day about PSE, and I would love to do that, but I want to focus more in on what's happening now, as we used to say back in the day. So, a quote I'm going to give from the Washington State Washington Clean Energy Coalition. Here's the quote. Customers of Puget Sound Energy and future generations would be harmed by the company's plan to continue emitting huge quantities of greenhouse gases for the next 26 years. So, flesh that out for us. What's going on here?
Yeah, boy. So it's a complex situation, and so we have submitted a four-page letter to the Utilities and Transportation Commission, detailing our concerns and providing an alternate analysis of PSE's different scenarios that they've proposed to serve gas for the next quarter century. So the way this works, integrated resource plans are sort of PSE's aspirational plan to how are they going to provide energy to us for over an extended period of time. And this is an important document because although it doesn't always delve into exactly how they're going to accomplish the thing, their goals, it lays out, the path that they're going to pursue, for an extended period of time to move us forward as far as our energy deliveries and consumption and reliability and costs. It's all in there. So that's exactly what Washington Clean Energy Coalition focuses on is these plans. And so what PSE does is they analyze a bunch of different scenarios, and these scenarios cover both what PSE is planning, different technology solutions that they could bring to the party. But it also looks at external factors that could happen that PSE has no control over. Like, for example, what would happen if our natural gas prices went way up? How would that impact customers and costs? Or what happens if the price of carbon goes much higher than it is today? How would that impact things? So it's sort of looking at multiple dimensions on possible scenarios for our future. And so in PSE's current gas plan, they studied about 10 different ones of these scenarios, and I'd like to actually describe to you three or four of them, which I thought were very interesting. So the first the baseline scenario that they have is called their reference scenario, and that basically assumes that PSE does nothing special at all, just sort of goes into the future, and everything is kind of sort of in the mid-range of possibilities. The price of gas isn't too low and it's not too high. It's just sort of in the middle there. And the carbon price is kind of in the middle. So when they look at that scenario, that's basically just to say, you know, what's the complete status quo? How does that compare to different courses of action that we could take? So then the next interesting scenario is what they call their preferred portfolio. And when they analyzed this portfolio, they found that doing some technology solutions like mixing in biodiesel or green hydrogen into their gas system would reduce emissions, and it would reduce some costs that they have to pay for those emissions. And so in the end, it reduces emissions and it costs less than the reference scenario. So yay, you do a few proactive things and you get better results and less cost for customers. That's great. Another scenario they looked at was what happens if gas prices go really high? And not too surprising, that means that customers are going to have to pay a lot more money for their energy. So interestingly, that one also reduces emissions because the price of gas goes high enough that people start trying to figure out how to not use so much. So that reduces emissions, but it's very costly. Now, the two scenarios that we are really excited about are the electrification scenario, where you just start reducing gas use a lot, and instead you use electric heat pumps to do your heating and cooling. You use induction stoves to do your cooking. Basically, you try to get as much gas out of the system as you can and transition over to electricity. Now, obviously, that takes considerable investment in order to you know, change out equipment. It's not like this would all happen all at once. It's more like you keep your gas furnace for, you know, 5 or 10 years, but eventually, when it's time to replace it, you replace it with a heat pump. So it turns out that is a more expensive scenario than PSE's preferred portfolio, but it reduces emissions a lot more. So just to give you an idea, if you look at the dollars expended per metric ton of emissions, PSE's preferred portfolio will remove 250 metric tons of emissions per dollar expended. So that's not too bad. But the electrification scenario removes 2,500 tons per dollar. So it's actually 10 times more cost effective than what PSE is proposing. And it's really not that much higher of a price. PSE says the cost would be about 20% higher. And we actually think that's inflated for a couple of reasons. And I can talk more about that, but basically, this is almost a no-brainer. And the fact that PSE has not chosen it makes us wonder whether they're really looking out for customers and the environment, or whether they're trying to preserve their current investment in the gas distribution system that they have.
Okay, so thanks for that great background. You know, the utilities, by their nature, the regulation of them tends to be pretty wonky, and most people just like, okay, I turn hit the switch and electricity comes out, and I'm happy as long as that continues that way, and I don't care how it got here. I want it as cheap as possible, and so on. But there is a thing in there that is not explicit, but it seems to me like it's implied, and that is the electrification model that you referred to costs more than PSA's preferred model. But the reason it costs more, I think I'm hearing, is that because it pollutes less.
The reason it costs more is because it's investing in our infrastructure. So our total energy infrastructure, it's changing to a different model, and that requires money. But it's not as much more expensive as you would think. You know, you would think, boy, that's a lot of stuff going on. But the reason it's only a little bit more expensive is because the other model that doesn't do as much, the PSE's model, they have to spend all this money on the carbon allowances for the huge amounts of carbon that they're putting into the atmosphere, carbon and methane. So it turns out it's the difference between these two things is, do you want your money to be spent, paying penalties for polluting the atmosphere, or do you want your money to be spent making real progress on the problem? And the end date of this, so they project out to 2050. In 2050, if you look at PSE's plan, it just enormous costs going to pay for the carbon allowances, like over $1 billion a year by the year 2050. You're paying much more money on the penalty than anything else, maintenance or investment in the system. It's all going just to that. I mean, not all, but a vast majority of your dollars are being spent to mitigate the amount of pollution we're putting in the air. Whereas the electrification scenario, that the emissions have almost disappeared by 2050 under that plan. So we're not spending any, near as much on the carbon allowances, but that money was spent earlier on in the period to transition us to this cleaner infrastructure. And the big takeaway I guess I want to leave you with is PSE's plan, by not doing much, defers the cost of electrification of cleaning up our grid to our children and our grandchildren. In 2050, they're still going to be facing the same problem we have today, and we're just going to put that on their shoulders. Whereas the electrification scenario means we've done the real work. So by the time we get to that date, they can spend their attention on whatever other concerns they have at that time.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest that we nickname PSE's preferred model as the kick the can down the road model. Because and it's just bizarre to me that with the penalties for polluting, in other words, having to buy allowances the way I understand it, versus just not polluting in the first place, the costs are fairly similar according to what I just heard you say. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I mean, I'm fairly easy to convince on this, but I think you've made a convincing case that the no-brainer is the electrification model.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a no-brainer that, to tell you the truth, I am not worried in the long term about what's going to happen. We are not going to get to 2050 with PSE's plan. It just makes no sense. So it will get fixed at some point. I just feel so certain, unless something really unexpected happens, the economics just aren't on PSE's side. If this plan is accepted by the Utilities and Transportation Commission, we will start down a bad path. And that's going to cost us money. It's going to cost us time and energy that we really could spend in more productive ways by making the no-brainer solution, the no-brainer decision sooner rather than kicking it down the road.
Okay, so the IRP that is on the table right now, does that have to be approved by the UTC?
It does.
Okay. And so if it's approved, then in what way, and let's just say regardless, I mean, hopefully your proposal of electrification will prevail, but whatever the case, the IRP will be accepted by the UTC at some time. And to what extent is PSC going to be bound by that, by the language in the IRP?
That's a good question, because it is sort of aspirational. So it's mm-hmm. not things that are in the IRP are not set in stone in the way that, you know, when they go out to get bids for various infrastructure that they're building, you know, that's when the rubber meets the road. So in one sense, you know, it's kind of like cities have a comprehensive plan, which sort of guides the development of a city. It's not as specific as all the codes and regulations that come out of that, but those codes and regulations are influenced by that vision document. So I guess you would say this is a vision document. It doesn't set anything in stone so that they can't get out of it. But you know, it's an important document, because it's an understanding between PSC, the public, the UTC, of, you know, where are we going. And, you know, this way, a good IRP keeps you from driving off a cliff.
Yep. Well, CERT planning certainly seems like a good idea, especially since we're going through so many transitions and so many concerns, including the environment, but also, you know, just how much people have to pay for their daily lives. One of the things I was wondering about, so PSC, I believe PSC sells gas for two separate purposes, or uses gas for two separate purposes. One is generating electricity in plants. The other one is distribution out to homes and industry. So speaking of the homes and industry distribution system for a second here, it's pretty clear that there's significant leakage of methane through that system. So is that leakage accounted for anywhere in this IRP?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I really know the answer to that.
Okay.
The PSC's calculations, I can see, you know, a lot of what they're doing. They have provided a spreadsheet to the commission, and we get to see that. So we can see sort of how we can see the top line dollar amounts, but how they account for each thing is not always completely clear. And so I don't know, you know, if they have factored in methane leakage through the distribution system, or even what rate they might ascribe to that. There's been work that suggests that these vast networks of pipes are leaking methane more than we previously thought. So if PSC had a particular leakage rate, I'm sure we would be going, oh, really? Is that what you think the leakage rate is? So, you know, I think, you know, what our hope is that we can be really strategic about focusing this transition by looking at especially the sort of the far-flung endpoints of the system. You know, let's address those first and sort of gradually trim the distribution network, you know, year by year. You know, this is going to be take a long time to unwind, but it's not the sort of thing that you just one day turn off everything, right? And you know, that would not be practical. So but I think it can be done strategically, and the more you sort of concentrate, you know, the last people who would be going off gas would probably be sort of in city cores and stuff, where you know, a gas can be served with a minimum length of pipe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that would probably be you know, let's get the low hanging fruit first, and then, you know, we can gradually make progress on this.
Yeah, well, it's real clear to me that the thoughtful, careful, well-planned, gradual approach is the one that succeeds. And of course, one of the things is people like to think that they're choosing to change rather than being required or forced to change. And by taking our time, it allows people to adjust to new ideas. And oh, my neighbor put in an induction stove, maybe that's not going to be so bad. Maybe I can live without gas, and so on and so forth. Otherwise, we really risk political pushback. You know, you're disrupting my life. You want to be in my house setting my thermostat and that kind of stuff. So the approach that you're talking about there really does make a lot of sense, I think. Now, there are a whole bunch of people in the world still who kind of love their gas. I think there are people that are, in fact, I got a full disclosure. At one time in my life, I was pretty fanatical about cooking on a gas stovetop because any number of reasons. People that cook on gas and love it will know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So what does your coalition do? Is there going to be a role for gas over the next 25 years, hopefully declining, but what kind of roles do you think will be the last to go? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So, I think that there are such good alternatives in the heating and cooking space that I think as people become accustomed to the idea, they're going to find that it's a cheaper and better experience. Both those things, if you're doing it with electricity, a heat pump is not only much cheaper to operate than a gas furnace in our area, but it also gives you air conditioning for free. I used to be one of those people who's like, only wimps need air conditioning. We only have a few hot days in this area for a year. Let's just tough it out. But when we got our heat pump, I don't know, it was, it was maybe close to 10 years ago now. And we did get that air conditioning. I have to say, there are some days when it is really nice not to be sweating it out. So, and I think as our climate gets warmer, and especially, that heat dome event that we had, is that 2 years ago or 1 year ago? My pandemic timing, yes, it screws me all up. Okay, it's two years ago. That was very nice to not only for my family, but we could have people over, who are getting very warm in their homes, and have time for them to get their body temperature back to a comfortable point. So and then cooking, of course, we've had an induction stove for probably 4 years or so now, and that is actually just a better experience. You can get exactly a repeatable amount of heat. It's very fast to boil water. There are no fumes, and we're finding out that fumes from natural gas are risky for kids. There's an asthma risk. They're just really, as a parent, I just can't see that parents are going to feel good about exposing their kids to, a fairly significant issue if there's a better alternative. And an induction stove is just so easy to clean. And it just has almost every advantage over gas. And the only reason that we thought gas was the way to go is because the gas industry gave us a good marketing campaign that convinced everybody that somehow getting heat from gas instead of from electricity is better. It's just, why? It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, well, of course, looking back in the olden days, the home I grew up in had those coil electric thingies.
Me too, right. So did love those.
Yeah, that, not cool, but I think some people get confused between those and induction stove. Well, it's electric. It's pretty much the same thing. And as you point out, they're just completely different critters, and they're a joy to cook on. And one mom pointed out to me the safety aspect of them too, that since the heat is going into the pans rather than coming from the stove to the pans, the heat's created in the pan. If some little child would happen to put their hand up, they're not going to get burned in the same way they would on an electric or a gas stove. So there's that. So I'll just summarize what you said there. Like, we can live a good life without gas. We don't have to have
Yeah.
gas to live well. And of
It's not a
course,
sacrifice.
right, it's not a sacrifice. It's a step up in lifestyle.
Now,
And
what I will say just is the one part that is probably of concern to people is if you go to your installer and find out how much it costs to put in a heat pump. Right now, it's a fair cost to make that transition. And I think that is scary to a lot of people that in some cases we're talking, thousands of dollars, maybe even a few thousand more than going with another gas furnace. The thing is that over the life of that appliance, you're going to be saving a lot of money.
right.
And so really it's a money saving thing. So now we're just getting into, whenever you have a big outlay like that, you need to look at models of financing and also, models of it encouraging people to get over that hump. This is not just a benefit for that homeowner, but it's a benefit for society. So
Yeah.
we can justify, some level of government support or utility support for making this transition. So, and especially for low income people, I think that being able to assist them in that investment is probably going to be very helpful to move things forward.
Yeah, for most people, any kind of new heat source or air conditioning source in a home is a chunk. And I transitioned to a heat pump in my house a few years ago, and TPU gave me an interest-free loan. I think, I don't know, 7 years worth or something like that. So
Wow.
it was interest-free. There's concessions going on right now. So and that does make sense in exactly the way you pointed out, and that is that there's a public benefit, and so the public should help to finance that public benefit.
And I think the Inflation Reduction Act does incentivize heat pumps. There's some rebates there or something. So I don't know the exact details, but I do feel like we are that assistance is not being ignored at this point.
Yep. And when a person is looking at the cost of a heat pump, they should be looking at the if they're using traditional energy sources, the cost of heat and air conditioning, not just the cost of heat. So that makes a big difference in itself too. And of course, there's another aspect to air conditioning. And as our environment gets warmer and warmer, as we've already seen, and that is the health aspect. I mean, people who have other health challenges, maybe aged or whatever, are really susceptible to illness, even dying in heat. So there's more than just excuse me, there's more than just discomfort. So let back to so I love that summary of transitioning to gas. And just to restate, we can transition away from gas, and we can live better, and we can live cheaper over the long run too. So back to the IRP for a second, just as we get close to finishing up here. So what's the timeline right now for this IRP?
So the commission is accepting public comment right now, and will continue to do so until June 5th at 5 p.m. So it's for your listeners who really want to help us get to a better place, they have an opportunity to submit their own comments on this issue, and then my organization makes it super easy for you to participate in, just a couple of clicks. If you go to tinyurl.com/reject-PSE-gas, that's all run together, reject PSE gas, you will get to a petition that we will send to the commission stating that you support the analysis that the Washington Clean Energy Coalition has done on this. And you don't have to do that blindly. We have a link there to the 4-page letter that we sent to the commission. And I encourage people to look at that because we have a couple of different graphs that show you the cost of the different scenarios that PSE evaluated. And when you get to the graph that shows, you know, the cost efficiency of, you know, how much emissions reduced versus dollars spent, it's stunning. It's really, you know, a 10 times difference. You know, you don't have to squint to tell the difference between PSE's plan and the electrification scenario. So that's a way you can just, you know, you can get your signature down there. But if you're, especially if you're part of an organization that wants to communicate to the commission, it's, you know, it's just an email. It doesn't have to be super long or anything. And if you state in that email that you support the letter from the Washington Clean Energy Coalition, you know, that just increases the credibility and urgency of what we're trying to tell the commission.
Yeah, outstanding. People are always asking, concerned people are always asking, what can I do? And I mean, here's a great, really direct, meaningful, timely thing they can do. And we will put that URL in the show notes if
Great.
people want to go for the show notes and they can find it as well. So, you know, I want to thank you not only for being here, but thank you for being a part of this incredibly effective organization. I mean, taking on a giant like PSE as citizens, it's David and Goliath doesn't even give a sense of what's going on here. It's more like, let's say, mosquito and elephant or something like
I wouldn't mind a David and Goliath outcome, to tell you the truth. But
that.
yes, it's I'll tell you, you know, I sort of backed into this getting involved in a different PSE project, and you know, sort of made me aware of you know, the importance of these integrated resource plan things. And so it's, you know, I'm here a little bit by accident, and yet I feel like I've been given a real gift to be able to get involved at this level. And the reason I think I say it's a gift is because it helps me be hopeful about our future. You know, in my previous life, spent a lot of time, you know, bent over a computer keyboard and just sort of, you know, being frustrated, like, why can't the politicians figure this out? Or, you know, how come we aren't making better progress? And now, you know, I can actually participate and feel like I'm not just tilting at windmills. There's, you know, there's actual impacts that we've seen, and so that's very empowering and hopeful for our future that this kind of participation is possible.
A great way of making the point. I mean, when I feel despondent about our overall direction, the solution to that is to, okay, John, get out and do something, make something happen, and you're doing it big time along with your organization. So wrap it up for us here. What message would you love for people to take away today?
I think that it's wonderful that our efforts to get a cleaner energy future are supported by the economic case. I've been, you know, supportive of environmental efforts for my whole life, but it always seemed like it came with a high price tag or personal discomfort. And we live in an era now, I don't know how often this happens, but you know, all the indicators are pointing in the right direction for us to have a real change in our future and our direction here. So it's just a luxury time to be involved in work like this when the money is pointing the same direction as the virtuous result. That's pretty cool.
So let's just call it, there's low-hanging fruit out there waiting for us, and we as citizens need to be going out there and grabbing it. Don Marsh, Washington Clean Energy Coalition, thanks so much for being with us today. It's been very informative and inspiring as well. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Don Marsh for shedding light in a layperson understandable way about PSC's proposal to continue polluting at present levels for the next 26 years. The really crazy part to me is that we as ratepayers are going to be directly covering the costs of this pollution as PSC purchases pollution rights from other less polluting organizations. Thanks also to Don for providing us with a direct and simple way for us to express our concerns to the Utilities Commission. Look for a link by going to ccltacoma.org and looking for program links for this show. Alternatively, you can go to the Utilities and Transportation Commission website and follow links to the portal for making a comment on PSC's Integrated Resource Plan. Keep in mind that citizen action led by Washington Clean Energy Coalition has a demonstrated ability to change environmental outcomes for the better. You can easily be a part of those successes, so reach out. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. This program, along with all other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under programming. In the meantime, always live like the mountain is out and take care now.